Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banagari Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Randana Jamuna Thera Banachari Yamuna Thera Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Banagari Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Thera Banachari Yamuna Thera Banachari Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada.
Jai Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Satasi Simonis Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Jai. Friends of the host, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda, Sri Advaita Gadara Shivasti Gaura Bhaktivedanta Jai. Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinata Shama Kunda Radha Kundi Gidi Govardhanki Jai. Rantaraj Shimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaura Vivanandi. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru Gauranga.
I'm sorry, I forgot one thing. Tomorrow morning, our ISKCON cow protection minister, Kalakanta Prabhu, will give Bhagavatam class. So I know we are all interested in the farming and cow protection, so please, you can hear through the YouTube or you can come to the temple.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, 10th chapter, verse number 20. Nasike nirabhiyetam Dodyu yati nabashvati Tatra vayo gandavaho Grano nashi jirikshita Ashike nirabe ditam. Jodhyati nabashvati. Tatra vayo gandavaho. Grano nashi jijikshato. Please chant. Nasike, in the nostrils. Nirabheditam, being developed. Jodhyati, rapidly blowing. Nabhyasvati, air respiration. Tatra, thereupon. Vayu, air. Gandavaha, smelling odor. Grihana, sense of smell. Nasi, in the nose. Jirikshata, desiring to smell odors. Translation. Thereafter, when the Supreme Purusha desired to smell odors, the nostril and respiration were generated. The nasal instrument and odors came into existence, and the controlling deity of air, carrying smell, also became manifested. Purport for Srila Prabhupada. The nasal instrument, odor, and the controlling deity of air, smelling, etc., all became manifested simultaneously when the Lord desired to smell. The Vedic mantras confirm this statement in the Upanishad statement that everything is first desired by the Supreme before the subordinate living entity can act upon it. The living entity can see only when the Lord sees. The living entity can smell only when the Lord smells, and so on. The idea is that the living entity cannot do anything independently. I think that is a very nice sentence worth repeating. The idea is that the living entity cannot do anything independently. He can simply think of doing something independently, but he cannot act independently. This independence in thinking is there by the grace of the Lord, but the thinking can be given shape by the grace of the Lord, and therefore the common saying is that man proposes and God disposes. The whole explanation is on the subject of the absolute dependence of the living entities and the absolute independence of the Supreme Lord. Here again, very, very important sentence. The whole explanation is on the subject of the absolute dependence of the living entity and the absolute independence of the Supreme Lord. Less intelligent persons claiming to be on an equal level with God must first prove themselves to be absolute and independent, and then they may substantiate their claim to being one with God. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Milikam Niratasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vatsalam Pangum Lam Jayati Virim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dhinitharina Avancha Kapatidubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vahe Bacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namaha Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shyadvaita Gadadha Shivasadu Shri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss, because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. So there are certain catchphrases that we have in our Krishna conscious philosophy that we regularly utter and that we accept as indisputable facts. Statements of fact that are just as they are. Aham Brahmasmi. I am not this body, I am spirit soul. Atattva Brahma Jignasa. This human life is meant for inquiring about the absolute truth. These are statements that we make all the time. But to that list, I think the title of this chapter can be added. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Now, the materialists, they may doubt these statements, particularly the last statement. But for those of us on the path of bhakti, for those of us on the endeavoring path of pure devotional service, we accept these statements as a solid fact. The Bhagavatam itself is set up as a progressive way, subject by subject, canto by canto, each canto revisiting the subject in the prior canto to broaden our understanding of it, to deepen our understanding of it, and to expand our understanding of the spiritual science presented in this most eloquent of books, the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're just a couple of handfuls of verses away from concluding this 10th chapter of the second canto, and thus concluding the 10th canto. The second canto. And moving forward progressively into the third canto. With that in mind, it seemed to me to be a worthwhile exercise to examine the titles of the different chapters in this second canto. Chapter 1, the first step in God realization. Chapter 2, the Lord in the heart. Chapter 3, pure devotional service, the change in the heart. Chapter 4, the process of creation. Chapter 5, the cause of all causes. Chapter 6, Purusha Shukta confirmed. Chapter 7, scheduled incarnations with specific functions. Chapter 8, questions by King Pariket. Chapter 9, answers by citing the Lord's version. And this chapter, chapter 10, Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Each one of these chapters in and of itself directs us, the reader, the studious follower of Srimad Bhagavatam, in a progressive level of advancement in a expanding level of understanding the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. First chapter. The first step in God realization is a very valuable guidance for practicing this statement that I mentioned we all say earlier, Atato Brahma Jignasa. What is that Atato Brahma Jignasa? It's the first step in God realization. In the second chapter, the Lord in the heart. The conclusion of the first step, Atato Brahma Jignasa, and thus the direction of the meditation that one should develop, the Lord in the heart. Next is pure devotional service, the change in heart. Such an important statement there, just that title alone. This is the activity that one performs while understanding the first two chapters and, very importantly, what pure devotional service brings about. The essential change of the heart. If there is no change in the heart, devotional service has not culminated. Devotional service has not embraced us, or we haven't embraced it, shall we say. The process of creation. With that change in heart that comes from these first two chapters, now one clearly and with opened eyes understands the details of creation. This shows the devotee is not just a mere sentimentalist, much as Mahaprabhu was accused of by Prakasananda Saraswati, but they have a deep and philosophical understanding of the world that we live in. Not just that we're here, just kind of going about it, just chanting Hari Bol, you know, whatever. No, we have a deep understanding of what's going on around us, of how the elements are interacting, and how all of that brings about a deeper understanding of the process of devotional service. Next chapter, the cause of all causes. Now, understanding the details of creation, the next natural question arises. What is the cause of it all? Anyone with any intelligence that sees something amazing, well, how did it happen? Where did it come from? Who made it? What's the details behind it? This chapter explains how the Lord himself creates, how he expands, and how he manifests in all aspects of creation. And that introduces us to the idea of the next chapter, Purusha Shukta explained. Purusha Shukta means that we're introduced to the manner of seeing the Lord in each and every creative element and understanding how he's present there. This gives us the ability to see the Lord everywhere by understanding him as the underlying factor. The next chapter, scheduled incarnations with specific functions. Now this chapter introduces us to the very personal aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how in his various manifested forms, each one has a particular purpose, a lila, if you will, to fulfill and an activity that they perform, all related very personally to that particular incarnation. The functions of Matsya Avatar are completely different than the functions of Nisimhadev. This is manifested like that. Next chapter, questions by Pariket. After hearing all these explanations in the previous chapters, unlike the exchange between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Mahaprabhu, where Mahaprabhu had no questions because the explanation was not clear at all, there are many questions that come from the hearer based on the very practical explanation of the speaker. So Prakrit Maharaj has various questions and he presents them. Next chapter, answers by citing the Lord's version. This is the prime example for the practitioner of bhakti yoga, for those engaged in devotional service, of how to explain things. Not through our own speculation, not through our own mental jugglery, but by citing the Lord's version. But that means we have to understand what that version is. That means we have to have gone through these previous chapters. And then finally, the conclusive point in this canto, Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. This is a self-explanatory title for this chapter. And it brings us to a full understanding of this canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're told that in the progressive study of Srimad Bhagavatam, we're expected to advance step by step, to mature, to deepen our understanding till we reach the 10th canto, where we can now absorb ourselves in the intimate pastimes of the Lord. And by intimate, this doesn't necessarily mean the Gopi Leela. The pastimes between Krishna and Yasoda are very intimate. The pastimes between Krishna and coward boys are very intimate. These are the personal pastimes the Lord exchanges with his devotees according to their relationship. So these are intimate. So this is the purpose of our study of the Bhagavatam. So in this way, we have a very strong and very solid case for accepting the statement made in this chapter title and embracing it as one of our indisputable facts that we speak in Krishna consciousness. I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. The purpose of life is to study what is the understanding of God, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is the answer. We can embrace these three statements and become completely fixed in our path of back to Godhead. Now, even more to the point, we find that even our great Acharya, Shripad Sanatana Goswami, has composed 5 extremely eloquent verses simply in glorification of the Srimad Bhagavatam's position, shall we say. These are found in his Krishna Lila Stava. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O nectar churned from the ocean of all the Vedic scriptures, O most prominent transcendental fruit of all the Vedas, O you who are enriched with the jewels of all spiritual philosophical conclusions, O you who grant spiritual vision to all the people of the world. This verse immediately identifies the Srimad Bhagavatam as a personality, not as some vague, dry book that's kept on a shelf somewhere with no purpose. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is a personality, the transcendental fruit, the enriched jewel, able to give all spiritual and philosophical conclusions. The second verse, O life breath of the Vaishnava devotees, O Lord, you are the sun which has arisen to dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga. We recognize that statement. You are actually Krishna who has returned among us. O life breath of the Vaishnava devotees. That's such a nice phrase. O Srimad Bhagavatam, I offer respectful obeisances unto you. By reading you, one obtains transcendental bliss. Have we obtained transcendental bliss? We're coming every day and hearing the Bhagavatam. For your syllables rain pure love of God upon the reader. You are always to be served by everyone, for you are an incarnation of Krishna. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O my only friend, O my companion, O my teacher, O my great wealth, O my deliverer, O my good fortune, O my bliss, I offer respectful obeisances unto you. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O giver of the saintliness to the unsaintly. Is that not us? We can honestly say we've attained a certain level of saintliness by our activities under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada. And we can honestly say that we've certainly come from an unsaintly background. Excuse me. Oh, uplifter of the very fallen, please do not ever leave me. Please become manifest upon my heart, upon my throat, and accompanied by pure love of Krishna. Is this not the mundane conclusion of every love song ever written? Oh, please don't leave me. Please always stay by my side. This is the plea of Sanatana Goswami to the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the example he gives us, that we should want the Bhagavatam to always be with us. These five amazing verses clearly give us an understanding of the supreme importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. And they further strengthen the statement that this title makes. Bhagavatam is indeed the answer to all questions. Excuse me. Therefore, we should never let it slip from our realization or lose sight of the fact as to how fortunate we are to hear, to read, to come in touch with the Bhagavatam itself through the actual person, Bhagavat Srila Prabhupada. If we give a little bit of thought to the effort that Srila Prabhupada put into producing the Srimad Bhagavatam, some of us in this community of a certain age group suffer with insomnia, me being among that group, and sometimes I might go 4 or 5 nights with only 2 or 3 hours of sleep. This was Prabhupada's regular activity, 2 or 3 hours of sleep a day. The Goswamis, this was all they slept. And they produced such massive instructions for all of humanity. I get 2 or 3 hours of sleep for 3 or 4 days and I'm unbearable to live with. Just ask my wife, she'll confirm it. But Srila Prabhupada's focus was to produce this Bhagavatam for the benefit of everyone. Of course, there's that famous... I mentioned this the last time I gave class. The famous quote Prabhupada said, asking, reading the Bhagavatam, he said, if someone says, oh, you're selling the book, but do you read it? No, I have no time to read. I'm only selling. I said, no, you must know the book. So bringing ourselves back around to the verse we have here today, I was realizing a couple of additional points as I was reading through this purport again. Independence. We all strive for independence. We all want to be independent. Where I work now, just this morning, we have put up all of the big 4th of July sale banners all over the store. 4th of July. Now, it used to be 4th of July Independence Day. Now it's just 4th of July. They don't mention the Independence Day anymore. But this was the whole point. I remember that famous Back to Godhead from 1976, the 200th anniversary of America, and claiming our independence, claiming our dependence on God was the title of the article, the lead article in that issue. No, we're not claiming independence, we're claiming our dependence. But everyone wants to be independent. Prabhupada says it right here. The idea that the living entity is that the living entity cannot do anything independently. One of the great benefits of the extended family unit is that those who are a bit older can observe the activities of those who are considerably younger and gain great realization. Watching my 1.5 and 3.5 or 4.5, whatever. She's very diligent to point out there's a half there. 4.5. Not 4. But watching these two little granddaughters, so much do they strive to be independent. My littlest one's favorite thing is, she's not talking yet, but she's very good at shaking her head no. You want me to feed you? No. Wants to feed herself. You want me to dress you? No. Whereas the other one will verbally tell you, no. So this desire to be independent is in the living entity. But why? Because we've left the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We've come here to try and enjoy separately from Him. But as Prabhupada says here, the idea is that the living entity cannot do anything independently. He can simply think of doing something independently. Simply think of doing something independently. These little kids, you know, they can simply think, oh, I'm independent. I don't have to depend on mom and dad. But every second, they're looking over their shoulder to make sure mom and dad are dead. This is the circumstance that the living entity finds themselves in this material world. So we shouldn't think that our ability to smell, our ability to taste, to see, all the different things we're understanding in this description of the Purusha avatar, that we can do any of that without the Lord. Because, how does Prabhupada say it? The independence in thinking is there by the grace of the Lord, but the thinking can be given shape by the grace of the Lord. When we declare our dependence on the Lord, then our so-called freedoms begin to manifest. But they're not really freedoms because they're connected to the Lord. But for one who is serving the Lord, they have no problem with that connection. There is no thought of, oh, I've got to make a garland for this guy. I've got to give a flute. I have to put, you know, whatever. One doesn't think like that. That idea is so foreign to a devotee who is steeped in the mood of seva. Therefore, we see in this particular verse here an amazing and boldly stated difference between our puny selves and that of the supreme Purusha. The supreme Purusha that's being spoke about here, he creates desires and then something, and the result of that desire with that something begin to manifest immediately. He desires and the facility to have that desire, the sense of that desire, the ability to enjoy the result of that desire, they all immediately manifest with the desire. Now, I think it's fair to say it's not the case for us. We have a desire to eat something. Well, now we've got to do the whole process of going out and, you know, buying the boga. Well, first we have to do the process of working. You get the money to put the gas in the car, to drive the car, to go get the boga, and then bring the boga back to the house, and then it's all got to be clean and cut up and prepared and then stirred and spiced, and then all of this just to enjoy something to eat. We desire to have some nice living facility. Now we have to arrange to, you know, either build it or have it built by somebody and pay them very extravagantly, and, you know, then have to go to work to be able to pay for that fact that we paid for something very, you know, all of these different things. Anything we desire carries with it a large amount of baggage that has to be completed to fulfill that desire. The Lord desires it, and along with that desire comes all the facility for fulfilling that desire. We have here the Supreme Purusha desiring to smell, and along with the desire to smell, not only comes the instrument that will fulfill that desire, but the items that will be enjoyed by that instrument that's going to fulfill that desire, and the controlling deity that will oversee the means of transporting those items for the Supreme Purusha to enjoy. All of that comes at the same time as he desires something. It's an incredible package of the word desire. The minute it's there, everything comes with it. The senses to enjoy the desire, the means that the senses will enjoy those desires with, the personality who manages all those desires, all of that's manifested simply by the will of the Purusha avatar. Not the case with ourselves. Here again, we have to work so hard for anything in this world. We have to work so much endeavor has to be there just to manifest the ability to start to fulfill the desire. And most of the time, we're so challenged by it that the result doesn't manifest in the period of time that we want, or by the time it does manifest, we've lost the interest in it. Or if it does manifest, it's not quite up to the expectations of what we wanted. This is the platform of material desires. It's never going to be that satisfying. Those types of desires, they leave us wanting. They leave us empty. The Lord himself is not controlled by those desires or what comes with them. That is the difference. We are controlled by our desires. Our desire for whatever, pick whatever it is that you're hankering for. We are controlled by that because we want that, and then we have to engage in a certain way to obtain it. And then we have to, once we obtain it, engage in a certain way to protect it and keep it. And then once we protect it and keep it, we have to engage in a certain way to be able to appreciate it. All of this endeavor just to satisfy some desires. Because we're controlled by those desires. This is why controlling the senses is one of the first preliminary principles of devotional service. Prabhupada could have introduced so many different things when he came to America. He chose to introduce the four regulative principles. Pretty harsh stuff for Americans. Pretty harsh stuff for hippies in the 60s. No intoxication. No gambling. Okay, the gambling wasn't such a big deal. No meat eating and no illicit sex. I mean, what was it Prabhupada said? When I introduced these things, I thought they would tell me to go back home. So, very, very, but the reason is because controlling the senses is paramount to being able to advance in the devotional path. If we don't control our senses, we have no control of our desires. And if we don't control our desires, we have no control over the mind and the activities of the body. This is the primary difference between us and the Supreme Lord. He's not controlled by his desires, and we're completely controlled by our desires. Now, looking at this whole presentation there, this, it can't help but remind us of the 12th verse in this chapter. One should definitely know that all material ingredients, all material activities, all time, all modes, and the living entities who are meant to enjoy them all exist by the mercy of him alone. And as soon as he does not care for them, everything becomes non-existent. As soon as he doesn't care for it, it's finished. Here again, you know, as I say, having little kids around can be very conducive to realizations. You know, you're playing with them some Play-Doh or, you know, drawing or whatever, and just on a whim, they decide that's not what they're interested in. When they're going to walk away, boom, it's done. Doesn't exist. No, come back, we're still doing it. Nope, not interested. Completely detached until the next whim comes along. But for the point of this example, so in the same way, all of the ingredients for material enjoyment, the activities, the time, the mentality, everything that goes into that package, including the ability to enjoy them, exist only because of the Lord's mercy. And when he doesn't care for that item anymore, it's finished. This is the process of creation, very concisely put into this 12th verse here of this chapter. So, you know, in this way, we can look at things and we can see very clearly what is the difference between our desires and the Lord's desires. This whole chapter is dealing with the Lord's desire to see, okay, the eyes come in, the Lord's desire to smell, the Lord's smoke, all of these different things in the Supreme Purusha Avatar. And it's such a clear difference for us to understand how they manifest in his circle of existence as opposed to ours. So these are some of the thoughts that came to me as I was reading this. I did want to take some time in today's class and speak about a favorite pastime of mine of Shivananda Sen. We observed his appearance day this past Monday, and so many wonderful pastimes are there. And of course, as we know, Shivananda Sen was an exemplary householder. I mean, first of all, he'd only work half the year. 6 months out of the year. 4 months he was in Bengal, in Orissa, and a month coming and going. I'm always amazed that, I can't manage to make it work in 12 months of the year. So, at any rate, as Dhruva Maharaj noted on Monday, he would maintain all the devotees that traveled on this journey every year to Orissa. Now, it's worth noting that the first 2 years that Shivananda Sen and all these devotees, it was just the men. It was a boys' week out, I guess you could say, It was the third year that all the wives and daughters and sons and kids and everybody, the whole village went, so to speak. This didn't happen until the third year. So, on one of these trips to Orissa, to Jagannath Puri, as is the nature in India, a stray dog attached itself to the party. Now, we see this a lot if you spend any time in India. The ashram that I stay at when I'm there for Kartik is right across the street from Indradyumna Swami and Bibi Govinda Swami and Balaram Baba. And on that street, there's one dog that has attached itself to that area. And they throw it some prasadam and this and that, and it's just a stray dog. Nobody knows where it came from, but it's now adopted that area as its home. And this is what stray dogs do. Many of the stray dogs we'll see in India are not very clean. I remember one time when I was traveling with Indradyumna Maharaj for Kartik, we had one young Australian boy, and by young, he was probably 7 or 8, maybe 9, very inquisitive. And he had a habit of picking up all these dogs. And Maharaj said to him, you really shouldn't pick all these dogs up. They have disease and everything. And the boy said, if they have disease, why don't they die? He always asked questions like that. If that's true, then what about this? At any rate, so Shivananda Sen's party going along, and this dog attaches itself, That's the nature of dogs. They need a master. Prabhupada says this very clearly. So the dog's going along. And so the devotees are kind to it. They give it some prasadam. Shivananda Sen became particularly fond of this dog. Look, this dog's following all the Vaishnavas. He comes when we have kirtan, he sits down and listens. When we do kata, he comes. When there's prasadam, he eats. Okay. So he would supply it food, make sure the dog was taken care of. So one day, as Dhruva Maharaj has mentioned, there were many rivers to cross, different tolls between the Hindu portion of Orissa and the Muslim-controlled portion of Bengal, and there were tolls to be paid. Now, these may just be boat keepers, boatmen, but they have certain standards. And unlike here in the West, where the dogs live a luxurious life in the home, wallowing in our beds, some people's beds, not mine, wallowing in the beds and, sitting under the table, whatever, this isn't the case in India. So the boatman said, all right, everybody, all great, but not that dog. He's not getting on my boat. Well, Shivananda said, no, he's part of it. No dogs allowed. So Shivananda paid 10 times the amount of the fare just to get the dog on. Which says two things. That he really felt this dog had taken his shelter, he needed to protect it, and that the boatman would do anything for a buck. So, all right, I'll take 10. Just put him over there in the corner. So they got the dog across the river like this. Now, one day, as mentioned by Dhruva Maharaj on Monday, sometimes Shivananda would be a little tied up dealing with the tollman and all, and the party would go on. And on one such day, this happened, and it was prasadam time, and the dog wasn't fed. The servants of Shivananda Sen didn't make arrangements so the dog could get some meal. And as a dog would, if there's no food here, I'll go find somewhere else where there's food. No big deal. See you later. Took off. So when Shivananda Sen returned and found out that the dog had not been given prasad, and that as a result the dog left, he was very unhappy. Well, where's the dog? Look around for the dog. And so they looked in there. No, he's gone. You 10 men. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, go and find the dog. 10 men? He sent 10 men out searching for the dog. So, and is this because he was just attached to some dog? No, it's because this dog took shelter of him and he felt an obligation. This is such an example of responsibility. Not only was he taking responsibility for all the Vaishnavas under his care for this trip, paying for their tolls, paying for their meals, paying for their lodging. What's that when we hold a big ISKCON festival and it says festival fees free? Everybody's like, wow, this is amazing. So Shivananda Sen was doing like this. But he had this same mood towards this dog that had taken their shelter. So when they came back and said, look, we went and looked, all 10 of us, we couldn't find the dog. Shivananda Sen became very unhappy. He felt he had not fulfilled his obligation to a living entity that had taken his shelter, and he fasted for the entire night. He didn't take any meal that evening. So in the morning, they continued looking for the dog. And it was finally concluded, all right, this is just a lost cause. As dogs do, he's gone somewhere else, and that's that. So with some sense of anxiety, the group continued on to Jagannathpur, where they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He received them as usual and arranged, oh, so wonderful to see all the Magali Jai, Hanupo, Shivananda Sen, and Paramanandapur, and there's Manari Gupta, and there's a... And then he arranged for all of their accommodations. And they all went to their rooms, settled, took their rest. The next morning they came to see Mahaprabhu and take their prasad with them. And Mahaprabhu was sitting on a little raised dais and eating some coconut. And there was the dog right next to Mahaprabhu, just a short distance away. Not like in his lap, like some of us do, but just a short distance away. And Mahaprabhu was eating this coconut pulp and throwing the remnants to this dog. And as he would throw it, he would say to the dog, chant Hare Krishna. And the dog would chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare. Now, here again, my 1.5-year-old granddaughter is beginning the process of embracing the English language. And it's much to the joy of her mother and her grandparents, myself and my wife, to, oh, she just said such and such. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. Most of the time it's just, you know, She has the same two syllables that, depending on how she says them, can either mean grandma, grandpa, mama, or, you know, but, you know, you all are, she's saying something. No, she's definitely saying grandpa. Yeah, she's calling me. She's definitely saying grandpa. That's not the case here. Chaitanya Bhagavat says that the dog was, and I use these two words, very clearly reciting the names of Rama, Krishna, and Hari. Very clearly reciting the holy names. The Mahaprabhu would throw some more coconut in the door. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Hare Hare. Eating his coconut. And the devotees were just like totally amazed. You know, they thought this dog had just, you know, gone and been lost somewhere. And here it is sitting next to Mahaprabhu, getting the prasadam directly from Mahaprabhu's hand. We don't even get that. You get some Mahaprasadam from Radhe Shyam's altar, and God counts your blessings. Directly from Mahaprabhu's hand, this dog was eating the remnants. And sitting there and eating and chanting, and Shivananda Sen saw this. And Shivananda Sen's natural humility, he went over and offered full obeisances to the dog. Not just, oh, Jai, Haribo, Hare Krishna, what an elevated soul. He got down and offered full obeisances to the dog because he considered he had made offenses by not caring for the dog properly, who was such an elevated spirit soul that he's sitting here eating prasada from the hand of Mahaprabhu. The next day, the dog was gone again. But this time, instead of the dog being like, oh, where did it go? It was understood by all that the dog had attained a spiritual body and gone back to the spiritual world by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Mahaprasada. As the Chaitanya Bhagavat says, such are the transcendental pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the son of Mother Sachi. He has delivered even a dog by inducing it to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. The Prabhupada in the purport to the Chaitanya Charitamrita on this pastime, he says, this is the result of Sadhu Sangha, of consequent association with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and thus being promoted back to home, back to Godhead. If this result is possible even for a dog, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, everyone in the human form of life should therefore associate with devotees. By rendering a little service, even eating prasadam, what to speak of chanting and dancing, everyone can go back to home, back to Godhead. Thunder confirms it. There we go. So we'll finish there. That's one of my favorite pastimes of Shivananda Sen, and I just wanted to add that to the mix. Let us focus on realizing the title of this chapter. Srimad Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Oh, I see we have questions, all right. Yeah, I'll hold on, Mother Radhanatha. Let me tune up my hands. Go right ahead.
Can you please give an example of an item that the Lord stopped caring about and thus it stopped existing?
Not off the top of my head, no, I can't. You caught me off guard, sorry. I mean, it's quoted in the verse, so that's why I mentioned it, but yeah, I don't know. Soma Prabhu?
Just a little comment about two words in the verse. Nasi, which means the nose. There's a nice little city just north and a little west of Mumbai called Nasik. And it's called Nasik, or nose, is because where Lakshman cut Ravana's sister's nose.
So, Suponika.
Yeah, Suponika. So that city is there, and there's a really nice ISKCON temple there.
The temple where the nose was lost. Pundarik Prabhu.
So this says we're completely dependent and Krishna is completely independent. That was the purport there. So if we're completely, if we're dependent and we can't do anything on our own, we have no independence, then why all these scriptural injunctions that we should do this? We shouldn't do
why
that?
What?
Then why all these scriptural injunctions are there? We should do this. We shouldn't do that. If we just say, I have to do whatever I have to do.
No, it doesn't mean we just sit and do nothing. We have to endeavor. We have to fulfill our duties. We have to embrace our responsibilities. But the ability to do so is based upon our dependence on the Lord to fulfill that. I'm certainly not qualified to speak on the Bhagavatam. I'm not qualified to even read the Bhagavatam, but because it's my duty ever so often to sit here and do this, therefore I have to depend upon the Lord to please enthuse me, give me a little direction what I can say. So, yeah, I can just sit down and ramble off anything. Everybody knows I'm good at rambling off anything. But by depending on the Lord, then that result comes. So the same thing. You know, whether one is engaged in their professional activity or in their responsibility raising child. I'll give you an example. Back to the grandkids. My world's surrounded by grandkids right now. We put our energy into these children and we don't often know what the result's going to be. And it sometimes pops out in a surprising way. My granddaughter, she's a third generation of beaters, making beads, neck beads, necklaces and things. So she was sitting there by herself with no prompting at her table, stringing these little beads, going, Namo, Namo, Tirasi Krishna, Prehasi, no. That's like blown away. So her ability to do that is because of the connection the parents had given to Krishna. They could just raise the child, but by keeping that connection to Krishna, by not being independent of Krishna, the result comes there. So this is the necessity of seeing our dependence, as that wonderful Back to Godhead magazine from July of 76, seeing our dependence on the Lord. Steve Tidamuni, you're about to throw something out there. I can see by that smile on your face.
I got the mic. You want to use your independence to try to get it?
the thought that comes to me, if God is so powerful, right? Mm. Could he actually give us some independence?
Say that again?
If God is so powerful, could he give us independence? I know. So we do have independence, but it's all given to us from God.
Our independence, so-called independence, as Papa does use the word.
It's real independence.
So-called independence brings with it so much difficulty that would not be there if we proclaimed our dependence on the Lord.
No, the independence is also used to love God. In order to love God, you have to be independent. It's freely given. So, that somehow reality is conditional life, and then we give that up, and we become Krishna conscious, emerge. But that independence is always there. It's just in the pure devotional sense, it's freely
the independence of the living entity is part of their eternal identity.
Exactly. Yes.
But when they understand that independence to be there by their dependence on the Lord, it becomes fully embraced.
All right, let me put it another way. Our independence is also given from God, so we're dependent on God for our independence.
That makes sense.
We always have, it's all given by God. I mean, we're presented. But we always have that autonomy, and, we express it. I mean, if we're thinking that the goal of conditional life is to become God, that is not...
Wait, who's thinking that?
Those people who aren't at class.
Oh, the ones who aren't here in Bhagavatam. Okay, all right.
That's not going to happen, so we don't have independence to do that.
Right.
And we can have independence to imagine we could do that, but that's not going to happen. You can try.
We got prana and soma, and then we've got our soma and prana, however you want to do it. Now I've got to go.
I was wondering that if everything Krishna acting on before a soul can act, whether it's a smelling or eating or drinking, Krishna never escorted Maya. So where this idea of enjoying Maya separately coming to the heart of soul?
Who said Krishna's enjoying Maya?
No, Krishna never.
Yeah.
So then, but then, where is the idea that soul gets to enjoy separately?
That's the illusion of separating ourselves from the Supreme
Lord. No, I understand, but in the purport you read, also last few days, saying that Krishna is smelling, then we learn and we act on it. Krishna is seeing,
tasting.
Where do we get idea of enjoying dead matter?
That's the illusion state of consciousness. That's what the material world is all about.
But Krishna never enjoyed that dead matter.
Soma?
Enjoying dead matter.
Let's pass it on back to Soma, and then I've got to boogie out of here.
Just quick. Krishna is completely independent, yet he likes to be dependent, like on Mother Yasoda, or he drives Arjuna's chariot, or his love with Radha and the gopis.
Mm-hmm. So. That's a very important point, because Krishna's independence from Mother Yasoda is by being dependent on Mother Yasoda. Yeah. All right, we have Vishana to finish there. I've got certain obligations.
No, you can go. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna himself put under the devotee's love to experience unlimited, unrestricted love. Hmm. So that's the only reason he become dependent. Not that he choose to become dependent automatically. He choose because he has a desire to enjoy unrestricted and uncontrolled love.
Hmm. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.